what really gets my dick hard is...
What? Welcome to Metal Up Your Podcast, episode 4. I'm Ethan Luck.
And I'm Clint Wells.
And this is the moment of truth.
It's your favorite record.
It's my favorite record, but also arguably Metallica's best album,
For
Master
sure.
of Puppets.
Could definitely be argued that.
Yeah. Personally, I wrestled for years, spiritually, emotionally, mentally.
Yeah.
What's my favorite Metallica record? Mm-hmm. And it's always teetered back and forth between this and Injustice for All. But when you and I have talked about this podcast and doing these episodes, I finally made a decision.
Yeah.
Final answer. And it's Master of Puppets.
Yeah, I have to say, immersing myself in this record this week, especially after last week's episode, which was Ride the Lightning, which is my favorite.
Right.
I definitely was... I came to the conclusion that although Ride the Lightning is still my favorite, I do think Master of Puppets is a better record.
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of... I mean, you know, production is better.
Which pains me to say,
better.
But yeah, it's more... It's just easily more powerful.
Sure, yeah. But that doesn't mean that Ride the Lightning can't be your favorite record.
Right.
But I mean, this one, gosh, I mean, it's undeniable. It's another perfect record.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, so much so that this year, this is crazy. I read this online today. I didn't know this was a fact at all. Master of Puppets was deemed culturally, historically, aesthetically significant enough,
just barely.
Yeah, for preservation in the National Recording Registry by the United States Library of Congress.
And it's the first metal record to be dubbed with such an honor.
Yeah, that's crazy.
I wonder how they decide that. Like, I wonder if a bunch of sort of stiff, artistic elite types...
White guys?
...had to, like, just sit down and, like, just think about Master of Puppets
for a while.
For listen to it and think about it. And
I wonder if they have to listen to it front to back. Like, let's
I fucking hope so.
Gosh, that would be amazing.
Those fuckers better have.
Seriously. They better have.
I'm just thinking of them listening to Battery. Like, they're like 4 minutes in. They're like, oh my God.
Yeah, what, this does not belong in...
Looking at their watch halfway through Master of Puppets, like, how long is this fucking song?
Yeah, totally. How long is this record? Oh, crap, like 54 minutes? Cool.
They're like, oh, only 8 songs, no problem. Oh, wait, they're all 10 minutes long.
Wait, it's an EP?
That is cool, though. Good for them.
Yeah, totally. I mean, and it's also cool that it's not something that, you know, there's like the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame and different awards. Right. It's like some bands, it's like your goal. Like, oh, I would love to win a Grammy or a American Music Award, something like that. This, I don't know much about this, but I'm guessing that it's probably just something that all of a sudden one day their manager calls. I'm like, hey, guess what? You know, you're in the United States Library of Congress. Oh, really? We are? Like, it's not like an award ceremony? I don't know. Maybe.
Yeah, what's the appropriate metal response to that? Fuck it.
So fucking what?
But you know how much they've all chilled out over the years. Like,
totally.
They've won 8 Grammys and all that. I bet they thought it was cool.
For sure.
I think it's cool.
I mean, that's an honor. I mean, like, especially to be the first metal album.
And there are only 450 other... records, like,
yeah.
It's a pretty small pool.
Very small, considering how many records have been released in the history of humanity.
Just off the top of your head, just for a few seconds, what other metal record do you think would qualify for that?
Other metal record?
Yeah, like...
I mean, maybe Rust in Peace.
Or, like, are we even considering, like, Sabbath Bloody Sabbath? Or, like...
I don't know, according to the Library of Congress, if that would be considered metal.
What their criteria for metal is?
Who knows? I mean, like, yeah, the Paranoid record, could that be?
Paranoid,
I mean,
yeah.
Yeah.
It's interesting to think about.
Motorhead's first, I mean, whatever, I don't know, Ace of Spades?
I would say if it's going to be one, Puppets is up there. I mean, that's...
Absolutely, 100%. I mean, that...
But you know what, don't you think they might have chosen the Black Album over Puppets, though?
I don't know, I mean, maybe, is there a...
Puppets more than Black Album, I'm just saying for, like... culturally significant, blah, blah, blah.
Sure.
It's kind of cool, I mean, that they chose Puppets, right?
It's very cool. Yeah, it's very metal.
Very very thrash of them.
It's very thrash metal of the Library of Congress
maybe
to choose that record.
Maybe we have got it all wrong, and these fuckers know they're metal, and they know Black Album's not really thrash. Black
maybe
Album
they've
wasn't
been trying to get it into the Library of Congress all these years. They're like, you don't understand. We've been listening to this record since so long. Finally, it's in there.
The Library of Congress is full of like old metal heads.
Gosh, I wish. Unfortunately, that's not the truth. We know this.
No, it can't be.
But yeah, I mean, what a perfect metal album. I mean, there's not one track you can skip on here. Quick couple of facts about the record, which most of you listening know this, but for the layman, here you go. Released March 3rd, 1986 on Elektra Records, their first
major label debut
from start.
Right.
You know,
because Elektra picked them up a little bit into Ride the Lightning.
They're back with Fleming Rasmussen, or as my computer tried to autocorrect, Flaming Rasmussen.
Which should be his name from now on.
It totally should. They were back at Sweet Silence Studios in Copenhagen, Denmark, recorded from September 1st to December 27th, 1985. The longest they had spent in the studio on a record.
Which, as you and I know, being musicians, so the benefit of the major label sort of on the front end, they had more time, bigger budget. They're able to be a little more thoughtful.
Yeah, I mean, take the time to experiment and have fun. I also read online today that they had every song ready to go except for Orion.
And The Thing That Should Not Be.
Yeah, totally. Those are the ones that were more written in the studio. I'm sure there were some riffs laying around and stuff like that. But
And even this was the first time that the label was actually able to put them in a hotel. Like, they didn't have to stay in the studio.
Right.
They were actually treated like human beings.
Yeah, totally. And they also... on work days in the studio,
they didn't drink, right?
They didn't drink. They were clean.
Which, do you think that's true? I read that too. Because they had to have been working every day, and I guess their schedule was like 7 p.m. to like 5 a.m. And they didn't have a drink at all during the making of the record?
Not the making of it.
Alcoholica?
Alcoholica? This was the year that they were coined Alcoholica.
Right.
Well, maybe, I mean, it's not during the entire record. It was like, what I read, it was on work days.
Right.
So let's hypothetically say they recorded 5 days a week, Monday through Friday, took the weekends off, and then they would rage.
True.
Now, on work days, does that mean, like, you know, the second I'm out of the studio, back in my hotel room, do I start throwing them back? Or, hey, it's 5 a.m, I'm going to eat some breakfast and go to sleep. I don't know.
Well, and let's face it, old Kirk Hammett had a lot of off time on the front ends of these records.
Oh, yeah.
Maybe he was just getting hammered. Yeah. You know, because what was he doing when they were building all the basic tracks? He's sitting around.
I mean, I know that during the writing a lot of the records, it's James and Lars. And then this was the first record that they would bring in Kirk and Cliff a little earlier.
Mm.
Like, this is either whether it was progressing fast enough or maybe they wanted some more creative input.
Yeah.
I mean, clearly it worked, you know, at least with Cliff Burton on Ride the Lightning, like, you know, and on this record, of course, you know, they brought him in and he did some amazing stuff on this record.
I know that we're going to talk about Cliff a lot. I think our next episode is going to be about Cliff, right?
It has to be, yeah.
I did, as I've been sort of immersed in the Puppets record this week, I've been getting bummed knowing that this is sort of the last piece of it with him. I think he had one or two co-writes on Justice, but
yeah, which we can get into a little bit. But I mean, we're right in the thick of the Cliff Burton era right now. I mean, this is
his peak.
It's his peak, and it's the year he got killed. You know, I mean, it was a tough year to be a Metallica fan.
Yeah, for sure.
I mean, in the matter of a year, they were already done. You know, they were done recording this record at the end of '85. Comes out March of '86. And by November, Jason Newsted's in the band.
Yeah.
That's less than a year.
Yeah, it's crazy.
It's insane. But we'll get into all that in the Cliff Burton episode, of course.
We'll wear our black armbands and
definitely
have a funeral
Misfit
march.
Misfit shirt. Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, we'll wear some bell bottoms and
totally
get our denim jackets, grow our hair long.
Grow like a little mustache, like a little pencil mustache. No, we love Cliff. We can't wait to talk about him.
Let's do some more facts.
Yeah, there's a lot of, there were some facts I knew, some facts I looked up, and things I didn't really know about this record, surprisingly. But thank you, Internet, and thank you, Wikipedia, but there's a lot of good stuff here.
Hey, there's nothing cooler or more badass than knowing some cold, hard facts about your favorite band.
Yeah, and there's nothing more metal than just going to Wikipedia and looking at Master of Puppets. I just wanted to make sure I got things right and not, you know, I didn't sound like an asshole and stuff like that. So
I did it too. I also read Mick Wall's book, which I can't recommend highly enough.
Yeah.
It's called Enter Night. And if you guys don't know who Mick Wall is, he's a journalist. He's written a lot of great, he wrote like the Guns N' Roses bio. He wrote the Motley Crue bio.
Yeah.
It's a book I reference a lot for these podcasts. And it's, anyway, check it out. Mick Wall, Enter Night. It's really cool.
Side note, we should reach out to him somehow and see if
Mick, I know you're listening, so just come on the podcast whenever your schedule frees up. I know you're busy.
Yeah,
I know
totally.
You travel a lot.
If you want to write a book about the podcast, that's totally fine. We have our approval. But this was a fact that I thought was really cool. And this was a very ongoing thing with Metallica, probably up until they made a video for One. But instead of releasing a single or video in the U.S. to promote Master of Puppets, Metallica went out for 5 months on an American tour and were direct support for Ozzy Osbourne.
And which, you know, and as I know, we're both primarily touring musicians.
Yeah.
5 months is a long time.
That's a long time. Like, I've been on multi-month tours.
Me too.
But
2 months, I think, is the most I've ever done. Like, I did 8 weeks in a row a couple of times.
Yeah. The longest I did was 11.
Woo!
It's long.
It's hard.
Especially when you get older and you're married and you might have kids or whatever.
Right.
You just... And when I did 11 weeks, it was all in UK and Europe. Hmm. It was the longest I've been without seeing my wife, without seeing my home, any of that stuff. But 5 months, I mean, maybe they had breaks in there, but... I mean, they're all pretty young. Well, I doubt they were all married at this point.
I'm in a situation now where I don't tour for more than 2 weeks at a time. So for me to, even me reading 5 months today, it's just like, oh, I just immediately feel for them.
That's a long time, but I just love that. I mean, it was the 80s, so you know, to promote, you definitely had to get on the road and throw yourself out there. But they didn't make a video.
Right.
They had minimal radio
play.
They
just took it to the people.
Yeah, totally. And they obviously had Ozzy's fans there, Black Sabbath fans. Ozzy was huge. Dude, direct support.
Think about this, dude. So say you're going to that show because you've kind of heard of Metallica. You're an Ozzy fan, but you heard Metallica's open. You're super stoked.
Yeah.
But imagine never even have heard of them, which was common on that tour.
Sure, yeah.
And they made a ton of fans. How many records did they sell with Puppets out with no radio play?
Within 6 months, I believe they're already at 500,000.
Right. And we were talking earlier before the podcast because we just can't seem to not talk about Metallica even when the tape's not rolling.
I'm telling you, I should hit record as you walk into my studio.
But a lot of that probably came from that Ozzy tour.
For sure, yeah.
So in your history of seeing shows, what was the show that you saw where the opening band blew you away and you had no idea and then you became a fan?
Oh.
Like what would be, you know what I mean? That must have happened to so many of those folks.
I mean, nobody that would make me think of it right off the top of my head.
Right.
If it was Metallica, you know, if maybe. But most of the time I've gone to shows, obviously you're going there for the headlining band. But
well, most supporting acts are disappointing.
Yeah, usually they are. I will say this, I totally non-metal, but I saw Rage Against the Machine. This was in 96, I believe. I saw them on the Evil Empire
tour. Yeah, I love
that album cycle. Yeah, I saw the album release show of that tour.
Whoa,
yeah.
It was in L.A.
Yeah, it was at Cal State Dominguez Hills. K-Rock was giving away free tickets, and I got some.
That's my favorite Rage record, by the way.
It was amazing. Side note, it was just them, no openers. And they basically played both records, first and second record.
Whoa.
It was incredible. But when I saw them again at Irvine Meadows in Irvine, The Roots opened.
Oh, cool.
Never heard of them.
Wow.
And at that point in my life, I was getting into hip-hop stuff like Public Enemy and like old KRS-One.
What a cool bill.
It was so cool. Well,
were they good?
They were great. They were incredible. And I remember like thinking like, who is this band, The Roots? And they're opening for Rage Against the Machine. The night before was the Foo Fighters in 96. So they were on their first record, maybe?
No, that was probably Color in the Shape.
Well, that was 97.
Oh, so...
So they were probably playing songs
playing Color in the Shape, but they were doing the first self-titled tour. Yeah.
So I went thinking that the Foo Fighters were doing both nights.
Mm.
And so when the Roots came out, I was blown away.
Wow.
I didn't become a fan like I am with Metallica or The Clash or certain bands.
Yeah.
But nonetheless, I was blown away.
Yeah, that's cool.
You know, they got my attention and I was in grass seats and like leaning on the railing, just like, oh my gosh, these guys are great. So that was cool. What about you?
I'm similar. I don't have a huge story, but I remember seeing Sleater-Kinney open for Pearl Jam in 2004.
That's cool.
And I knew that Pearl Jam were big Sleater-Kinney fans, and I thought they were pretty good. I liked it. I would say the biggest fan I am of a band that I saw opening was I saw a band called My Brightest Diamond open for Sufjan Stevens.
Okay.
This is the most unmetal.
it's pretty unmetal.
But you hopefully can resonate with this as a fan of music. She played a song called Bring Me the Workhorse. I didn't know that it was called this at the time. And I literally left her set and went to the merch table and asked whoever was doing the merch. I said, the song she's playing right now, what record is this song on?
Yeah.
And bought that record and bought a t-shirt.
That's cool.
Which is cool. Like, I hope that still happens, you know? I hope people are still doing that.
I've definitely gone to shows for the opening band and left.
Right. I've done that too.
Yeah. I went to Bridgestone Arena here in Nashville. Now, you might hate me for this, but the headliner was ZZ Top.
Mm-hmm.
I was so excited to see the Stray Cats open.
Oh, yeah.
Because I'm a big Setzer fan. And I watched the Stray Cats and I left.
But that's almost co-headline world. This is like a legacy act, but two legacy acts.
Yeah, totally. I mean, I should have saved for ZZ Top, but I was like, you know what? I don't want to see ZZ Top in an arena. I mean, I didn't want to see the Stray Cats in an arena, but I got to see them nonetheless. Yeah, yeah. They don't tour hardly ever. I don't know.
That's cool, though.
Yeah, it's cool. I just hope
the ZZ Top guys aren't listening right now.
Oh my gosh. Bummed. If Billy Gibbons is listening, I'm so sorry, man. It's not you, it's me. I was tired, I was hungry, I needed to get some food that night. But
so back to Metallica. So they did this Aussie tour, which I read that today that they bought onto that tour.
Oh, that's crazy.
Should we tell our listeners what that is if they don't know?
Sure. Yeah, I mean, if you're a smaller band and there's a bigger band going on the road, your label, your management can submit to get on that tour, but it comes with a price.
Right.
So, you know, let's hypothetically say you're a big Aussie fan. You're a Metallica. You want to open on this tour. Your label reaches out and says, "Hey, Metallica wants to do it." Bearing approval, of course, you know, Ozzy probably has some say in it. Like, "Yeah, I don't want that band. I don't care how much money they throw at me. I don't want them." But he probably like thought Metallica was cool. Oh, the buy-on is $30,000,
right?
Or whatever.
Or it could be, well, they want a cut of merch. Or it can be, well, they don't get a guarantee.
Right.
There's all sorts of different ways to buy onto a tour.
Yeah, it's not just what you think or what you might assume is the headliner, and then they choose two opening bands, right. And that's just how it is.
Which sometimes that happens.
Oh, totally, yeah.
But in this case, Ozzy had never even heard of Metallica. And they were such big Sabbath fans that they would soundcheck with Sabbath songs. And
Ozzy, didn't he think it was insulting?
And he thought they were fucking with him.
Like making fun of him?
And at this point, they still weren't superstars yet, you know? So they're like, yeah. Dude, we love you. No way.
No, we're covering your song for soundcheck.
So they did that five-month tour. Then they did the European tour.
Yeah, I mean that was the tour that the
fatal bus accident.
Yeah, the bus
which
crash.
You and I travel in buses all our lives now.
Yeah. And I'm about to in about 2.5 weeks. Yeah,
and I'm on a bus every weekend now doing my thing.
Yeah,
it's super scary to think about that.
It is. Yeah, I mean I hear about bus crashes. I've seen stuff on the news about them. Obviously the Cliff Burton situation, but I don't know. When I'm traveling, I feel safer on a bus than I do on an airplane.
I do too.
Which is crazy.
It's insane.
It's totally insane, but...
I do too, though.
I get in my bunk, and I mean, I think about if something went wrong, you know, hopefully it won't be that bad, and, you know, whatever, but...
Well, here's the unique thing about it is, for those of you who don't know, most of the buses that we lease to do what we do in the States, they don't have windows in the bunk area.
Some of them do, but they're not usually big. I've been on one bus where they were big enough to
like fall through.
Yes,
where the one that they had leased a bus in Europe because they were going from Stockholm to Copenhagen.
I think so. Yeah,
and basically the whole side of the bunk was a window.
Yeah,
so when the bus went on its side, he went through the window. I don't think that would happen on a normal touring bus these days.
Right. Yeah. Yeah, I mean, UK and European buses are a little different.
Right.
I mean, I've been on a number of those where there are bigger windows.
Right.
Now, I'm a big guy. I don't know if I could fit through it, but maybe.
Yeah.
But I still think about it. You know, every time I get in the bunk, I think about, like, you know, if something happens, if we hit ice or if there's a drunk driver or the driver falls asleep, something, I think about that stuff. I've had friends in bus accidents. I've been in bands where buses have burned. Like, it's, you know, shit happens.
I've been in a bus where we've been hit by a car before, which was horrifying.
It is. However, the buses are freaking tanks compared to like a Honda Civic, you know.
Totally. You're probably going to be okay if you're in the middle of that thing.
Totally.
But it is funny that you mentioned Black Ice, or you mentioned ice, but so that was the famous sort of excuse.
That was the excuse. Hetfield famously, you know,
walked even for miles in his underwear. Or
yeah,
whatever.
And even on like the Behind the Music episode, like says that he like grabbed the driver, was like, "Show me this black ice." Yeah. Like, I just walked. I couldn't find it.
Yeah.
You know, so, you know, the driver was charged with vehicular manslaughter.
Oh, really?
But was never convicted.
Interesting.
Yeah. So, I mean, I don't know what those dudes think about that now, but I mean, Hetfield for a long, long time, you know, didn't believe the guy.
I think it's real safe to say that not only did Cliff's death have a massive impact on the music, it definitely had an impact on just the emotional, personal aspects of the band, especially James.
For sure, of course, yeah. I mean, they were brothers. I mean, they're, you know.
And we sort of, as fans, we're all sort of left with the eternal question of like, what would have happened, you know, through every step. I mean, there are moments of Justice for All that are lacking what Puppets has. So
I mean, the bass would have been mixed in if Cliff was there. You know that.
Oh, I didn't want to say it. Sure. I didn't want to say it outright.
I said it.
That's one of them. But then the commercial aspects of the Black Album, the alleged missteps of Load and Reload.
Yeah.
Some people don't like that Metallica made a record with a symphony, which I think Cliff would have fucking loved because
he totally
because he was a classical music freak.
For sure, yes.
And then, of course, Saint Anger shit. Like, well, imagine Cliff around for that. Like,
I'd imagine if I could speculate that Cliff definitely would have stepped in more than Kirk. He was just in the back going, like, yeah, let's not fight. But
I do. There is a moment in the documentary, though, where Kirk, they're asking him once again not to play guitar solos. You remember this moment? Mm-hmm. And Kirk goes, I just think we're dating. Because Lars was saying something like, no, this is going to record. It sounds like now, you know. And Kirk actually stands up for himself and says, I think we're dating ourselves by not putting guitar solos on this record.
Yeah.
It's a pretty cool little moment.
Yeah, totally. No, and I agree with him.
I 100% agree with him.
But back to Cliff's death, I think about this every once in a while when I get into a discussion about Metallica and Cliff Burton specifically. There's not a lot of bands where someone has passed away, like, tragically, that still have the legacy that he has.
Yeah.
You know, like...
Even someone like Bon Scott doesn't.
Totally. I agree with that. I mean, there's AC/DC freaks out there that are like, you know, Bon Scott's the best singer of AC/DC.
He's amazing. But, of course. But Brian Johnson came in and kind of kicked ass.
Kinda, yeah.
And we love all those Bon Scott days, but yeah, we don't talk about Bon Scott the way we talk about Cliff Burton.
No, Cliff Burton is still like a member of Metallica,
right?
And like on stage, so to speak, and he's
never actually been replaced. I don't think in the minds of those dudes, and in the minds of a lot of fans.
Yeah, I think Robert to those guys is probably the closest because he plays with his fingers really fast. It's,
right,
but there's things that he lacks that Jason had, you know,
and we'll get into all that for sure.
Of course,
but I agree.
Course. But I mean, Cliff was like, but imagine like in the 80s. I mean, this was a band like they release. Like I said earlier, what is arguably their best record, they're still not commercially successful.
Right.
They may have sold 500,000 records that year, but they're not commercially successful.
That wouldn't happen until Justice.
Totally. I don't think it was until 91 that, where was it? I read it. Something, I think it was the early 90s where basically they finally got a platinum record. Like Puppets went platinum.
Oh, okay.
I'm pretty sure. I know in 03 it was.
But didn't they win a Grammy? Didn't they win a Grammy for One? Like, what do you think Cliff would have thought about that?
Or was that the year that they didn't win a Grammy and they lost to Jethro Tull?
Oh, that's right. They lost to Jethro Tull
for best hard rock metal record. The dude played a flute.
Yeah, the penny whistle or whatever the fuck that was.
The penny whistle. Oh my gosh.
Well, it's safe to say that you and I have a lot to say about Cliff. And dude, once we get into the track by track on this record, I'm in Cliff City on this motherfucker.
Oh, yeah, totally.
But maybe we should save some of that.
And we can save some for the Cliff episode.
The Cliff episode,
we got to talk about Cliff, obviously. I mean, he's got writing credit on you know, half these songs. And, I mean...
He's just the dude, man. He's
totally.
The dude.
I've got a friend who maybe we should have on this podcast because he is a Metallica hater.
What?
Post Justice.
Oh, okay. He got off on the Black Album.
Yes, totally. And I would love, and we've talked about it, him and I, but I would love to have him on and discuss like why. Because when I hear people hating the Black Album, I'm like, well, what about the thing that should not be? That could be on the Black Album.
Yeah.
Sanitarium.
For Whom the Bell Tolls could be on the Black Album, maybe.
Totally. I agree with that.
Well, he wants to talk shit about the Black Album, I'm okay, but he wants to talk shit about Load and Reload, I'm going to get mad.
I would love that. He's also like 6'7", so...
Oh, he'll kill me.
Well, I think we should get into a track listing at this point and go track by track. You know, we threw out some facts. There's plenty more, of course, but...
Well, let's... Right before we do that, can we talk about the Big Four?
Yeah, of course.
Let's get into that before the track.
Yeah, gosh. I mean, 1986 was... 87, I think, officially was the year that they were coined the Big Four. Of course, Metallica, Anthrax, Megadeth, and Slayer. But in 86, you had Master of Puppets, Reign in Blood, Among the Living, and Peace Cells. That's unreal.
Who originally said the Big Four? Was it like a journalist or something?
I think so. A journalist, I think, also dubbed them Alcoholica. Same year in 86, too.
And they made the Kill 'Em All shirt, but it said Drank 'Em All.
Yeah, Drank 'Em All, yeah.
That's pretty good.
I would love that shirt.
And I think when Metallica heard about it, they liked it so much that they like got parody shirts made. And yeah. I like that they sort of embraced that.
Yeah, they totally did. Of course.
Here's a question about Big Four shit that I'm, because you actually like all these other records. I love Rain and Blood, but you're actually a Megadeth and an Anthrax guy.
Yes, totally. Yeah.
Which I'm not as hip to that.
Anthrax might be my second favorite of the Big Four.
Okay. Over Slayer?
I would say Slayer is my least favorite.
What?
Yes.
Okay.
There's no wrong answer. No disrespect.
But no, there's no wrong answer. I get it.
I do love Slayer. I think Slayer is fucking awesome. If I had to pick an order of my favorite Big Four bands,
it would be
Metallica, Anthrax, Megadeth, Slayer.
Okay. Yeah, mine's Metallica, Slayer, Megadeth, Anthrax.
Anthrax people, I think, got turned off because of Joey's voice.
Yeah. But those dudes were Thrash City. I mean, for sure.
Totally. Yeah.
So all these amazing sort of seminal thrash records happened that year.
Yeah.
They all get dubbed the Big Four. Definitely those other three bands were lucky to be included. They earned it, but
yeah,
to be sort of tied to that ship was good for them. It's good for everyone.
Yeah, and I'm sure Master of Puppets had a huge hand in those guys selling records.
Yeah.
Of that record, whatever record they put out that year.
Which is cool. I mean, I love that.
That's how it works. I mean, you have one big band that's selling all this stuff, and then it gets people exposed to that kind of music or other bands that they're influenced by or that are in the same genre.
Well, and I like, Slayer's not as much a part of this, but I like that there's history with all these bands. Obviously, Dave Mustaine was in Metallica, a sort of unamicable split there. But I love that Anthrax is the band that lent Metallica their gear when their shit was stolen.
Them, you know, place to stay.
They
and
stayed
food
with them
when they recorded "Kill 'Em All."
And actually, on the European tour, the Damage Inc., the European leg of the Damage Inc. tour, they brought out Anthrax, and it was their first European tour.
Yeah.
So I love the like sort of familial aspect of all that.
They're definitely family with Anthrax. I think. I mean, I think in the early days till now, I mean, they always have a home in New York or whatever, you know.
Right. Now they all own multiple homes in New York. So
yeah, totally. I just found out that James lives in Vail, Colorado now.
Yeah, he left California to get away from progressive elitism.
I didn't know this. Like, I was really surprised.
Because he's
like,
big into hunting and shit.
No, I know that. Yeah. Well, I think, it makes sense, too, with him being sober now for, 15 years? I think he likes solitude. And, I mean, he even has a ranch in the Bay Area, you know, with acres and acres that he can hunt on and be by himself and in the quiet. But yeah, I listened to the Joe Rogan podcast.
I was going to say, you should mention that.
Yeah, the Joe Rogan podcast was awesome. Like I
haven't had a chance to listen to it.
You don't often see members of Metallica being on podcasts often, but
yeah,
I saw that he was on
rare.
That one. Yeah. They're also going to be, I think James and Kirk are going to be on the Nerdist podcast soon.
With Chris
Hardwick?
Chris Hardwick,
yeah.
I said Chris like I know him.
Yeah.
Oh,
Chris?
You mean with Chris?
Chris.
Chrissy?
I was trying to think of a funny nickname for him. Oh, Hardy?
Hardy?
Dang.
Hardy Hardwick?
Hardy Hardwick. It's one of those things, you know, I just didn't know that he found a place and moved to Vail.
It sounds a little weird on the face of it, but now I think about it, it's like, where else would James Hetfield live? Colorado sounds perfect because
that makes sense. Yeah.
It's a total like marriage of sort of like hippie, open-minded stuff, but they're also like more chill. Like I can see California, especially in the circles he probably runs in, which is wealthy elite celebrities,
right,
being judgmental. Like if you don't toe that progressive left line, which he really never has.
Well, in that podcast, he talks about it. You should listen to it.
I can't wait to hear it.
Yeah, you know, he talks about how he's kind of sick of the Bay Area.
Yeah.
Like, it's still a home for him.
Sure.
He still has, I'm sure, multiple homes there. He's got his ranch. They have the studio. The headquarters is in the Bay Area. But he talks about how, you know, everyone's, you know, very liberal and, like, free thinking and all this stuff. But we'll judge him for hunting.
Yeah, the quote I saw him say today, I'm going to butcher it, but it was something like, he's like, I hunt for my food. He's like, and I guess me and those people have different ideas about what eating organic is like.
Yeah. You know, he talks about that in the podcast. He talks about, you know.
Which is pretty good.
Totally. The same people that would judge him for hunting his own food. And he talks about it in the podcast. He's like, you know what? I go out. He's like, I don't leave anything to waste. Like, I go and hunt. I kill a deer, let's say. And that is feeding my family. Because the same person that's judging me for that is going to like a top-notch San Francisco restaurant and getting venison on the menu.
Sure.
You know, he even talks about it probably came from like, you know, the other part of the country or whatever.
This actually ties in pretty well to getting into the record because a lot of this record, particularly songs like Leper Messiah, deal with hypocrisy.
The
erosion of authority, disposable heroes. And
yeah. Well, let's get into it.
Hell yeah, let's get into
track
it.
Track listening? Gosh.
We're going to do our track by track, folks.
Yeah.
Get ready for the track by track.
Here we go. This is where we should insert, like, track by track.
I think you just did.
Really shitty. All right. I mean, what a hell of an opener with Battery.
Amazing opener.
Is this their best opening track on their discography?
Oh, I might have to go with Blackened.
Blackened's amazing.
But, I mean,
but it's the same formula.
It's the same formula. We talked about it on the Ride of Lightning podcast.
Yeah, totally.
Ride of Lightning sort of set this cool, strange template for their next three records, all by Flaming Rasmussen. Flaming Rasmussen. That's his name, though.
Flaming Rasmussen?
Total thrashy, what would you call it, openers like these? Fight Fire with Fire, Battery, Blackened, just thrashy, I mean, they're balls just, to the I wall. Mean,
it's metal up your ass.
It's no joke.
Seriously. And it starts off very beautiful. Same, you know, like Fight Fire with Fire, Battery, it's like, it's a clean, kind of cleanish guitar, really cool part. Like, the low notes are actually chromatic. It's like E, F, F sharp, G.
Yeah.
For all you music nerds out there. It's all two really of you. Cool.
And I do like how on this one, it's when it gets heavy, it's the same melodic thing.
It's but not it's just, a different,
right.
A whole different song or whatever. But, I mean, the second that clean part ends, I mean, it's just, fuck you. This is Battery, you know?
And what a killer riff. It's got the, I don't even know how to say it. You're probably more knowledgeable about music than me, but it's got like those thirds in it that it sounds unique.
Yeah, totally. Yeah, they did a lot of cool stuff on this record, I think, musically.
And who do we have to thank for that? Who can you imagine was behind making them more harmonically interesting?
Probably Dave Mustaine.
Flaming Rasmussen?
Flaming Rasmussen?
No, I bet that was Cliff, dude.
Yeah, it's very possible. I mean, Battery, the writing credits are just Hetfield and Ulrich.
Yeah. But I bet that main riff, I bet they just did the normal thrashy thing, and I bet Cliff's influence was in moments like that.
He probably also had an approval, too. Like, hey, Cliff, what do you think of this thing we just wrote?
He's I think
like,
it kicks oh, ass.
That's great. Yeah, yeah, totally. But, I mean, Battery is another one of those ones that just doesn't really let up. An amazing album opener.
I agree.
They have a record for having great album openers.
Yes.
Even currently on Hardwire.
I agree. I think Fuel's a great opener. I think Ain't My Bitch is a great opener.
Yeah, totally.
I mean...
Don't worry, we'll get to Load and Reload.
I'm just saying, they do have a good history of having good openers. Yeah, they do.
And Entertainment's good. But on Saint Anger...
Oh, Frantic. I mean, if you're going to pick an opener over that batch, I would pick Frantic.
That's true.
They're still good at picking openers, even when they have a pile of shit to deal with.
Totally.
Did you know that Battery was the first song they ever played with Robert? Because at his audition, that's what he requested.
Yeah, it's in the document in the Some Kind of Monster documentary. Like, they're like, "What song are you going to play?" He goes, "I don't know, Battery."
Yeah,
and they're all surprised. Like, "Oh, you can play that with your fingers?"
Yeah,
and yeah, they even make comments about how fast he played with his fingers. Like, no one's played that fast since Cliff.
Which I'm a Jason dude, but it's true. I mean, it really is true.
Rob's a great bass player.
He is. He's
great incredible.
Bass
player. He's. I don't love his braids or his crab walk. However, all that to say, musically speaking, he's a great, gifted, talented bass player. I mean, like Suicidal Tendencies or not, the stuff he did with them, like there's some bass parts in there that are like, holy shit, what are you doing? He's a very, very good bass player.
Yeah, he is, no doubt.
But yeah, God, Battery. I mean,
great chorus too. Like I think that. Like, I think some of the side B tracks, which we'll get into for sure, and I love them, but they're not as, I don't know, there's something about the chorus of Battery, something about the chorus of Fight Fire with Fire. They're like good songs. They're not just good thrash songs.
Yeah.
I feel like you can hear Battery.
Have my comments when we get to side B, because I think there's some stuff on side B that has that.
Okay.
Not as much as side A, I will agree with that, but there is that in there.
I agree. We'll get to it.
Yeah, totally.
And it's not a surprise to any of you. Sometimes me and Ethan might disagree about stuff.
What?
What, huh?
No.
But I just feel like you could hear Battery one time and immediately be able to sing that chorus again.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
It, like, sticks with you. You know what I mean?
Well, yeah, especially, I mean, even just, like, the hook after the main part of the chorus is, Battery! It's just, I mean, that's, it's awesome.
All you have to do is be able to remember the word Battery.
Yeah, totally.
Battery!
Yeah, and it's about Duracell.
It was actually their first commercial song. They actually wrote it.
Literally a commercial.
It was the little bunny running around.
I wonder if a battery company's ever hit them up about using that song.
Well, you know, thankfully, I think they have always owned their own masters. So
Not always.
Is that
no,
new?
No, it's more recent.
Where they recently
yeah.
got hit
again,
to that
listen
shit.
To that Joe Rogan podcast.
Damn it.
Hetfield talks about it. Yeah. I mean, they've had blackened recordings for a long time, but like I can't remember the year, but it wasn't that long ago that they finally got the master recordings for, I believe, the first five records.
Well, that's crazy.
Correct me if I'm wrong.
So who owned it? Like Q Prime? Who would have owned the masters?
Probably whoever bought out Elektra at some point.
Damn.
I don't know. Who bought out Elektra? Capitol?
See, this is back in the time, kids, when music labels had integrity. And I bet people wanted to get those songs licensed, and their label was like, no way. Yeah.
Well, I mean, I think they still, I mean, they probably owned at least half of their publishing, stuff like that. So, I mean, they probably had some say. And like there's a movie called Hesher. You need to watch. It's awesome. And it's one of the first movies that Metallica like officially licensed a bunch of their songs for.
Oh, cool. What's it about?
It's fucking weird. It's weird. You just have to watch it.
Okay. Well, my favorite movie is Eraserhead, so I can handle weird. My favorite director is David Lynch. Is it weird like that?
True. No, it's not weird like that. Oh, it's just like I had to watch it two or three times to kind of like understand. Just all I'm going to say is watch it.
Okay.
Anyone listening, the reason I heard about this movie was because of Metallica, because like in the trailer, it's like Master of Puppets, I think, or maybe Battery.
And, is it just their earlier shit, or is it their whole...
No, it's like earlier stuff.
Okay, cool. Yeah.
But anyways, all that to say...
Hesher.
Hesher, it's called, yeah.
All right.
But back then, in the, you know, Hetfield even brought this up on that Joe Rogan podcast, where when he's talking about now owning their masters, that back then, and even, I mean, to this day, but more so back then, like, a record label is like a bank.
Mm-hmm.
You got a loan.
Right.
To do a record, and then
you have to pay it back.
Totally, right. Yeah. And at the time, you know, the bank or record label owns your record.
Right.
Same way the bank owns my house, you know?
Right.
Same kind of idea, but...
Wait, the bank owns my house?
What? Wait a second.
Is that true?
Are you kidding?
Oh, shit.
But yeah, anyways, we can all agree that Battery, Duracell or not...
Well, Battery is like sort of like instant classic. It's a classic Metallica song now.
Totally. Still playing it to this day. Classic Metallica, not as classic as obviously track two, the title track.
Oh my God. Okay, so Master of Puppets for me is...
The most played live.
Most played live of all their tunes.
Yeah.
Which that's interesting, although not surprising, I guess.
Not surprising, but it. You don't think of this as like, this is the only single they released, quote unquote, from the record.
Right.
I mean, it's fucking long.
It's long.
The third verse doesn't even happen until after a bridge.
I know.
A solo, and then another bridge. And then the third verse happens. And that's like their most...
There are stories about Lars, when they were composing this record, about he would check to make sure that they were long enough. Where if a song wasn't long enough, he was like, we're going to make it longer.
Eight songs and it's almost an hour long.
But it is, and I feel like on our Metal Up Your Podcast and on the podcast I did with you on Pirate Satellite,
yeah,
I use the word masterpiece too much and I'm trying to curb that. But Master of Puppets, I do think, is quintessential Metallica.
Yes, totally. It is, yeah.
It's one of their best songs. It's in my top 10. Would this song be in your top 10 of all Metallica songs?
Yeah.
It would?
Yeah, 100%.
Would it be in your top 5? It's in my top 5.
Yeah, I'd say top 5 for sure.
Okay.
Don't ask me what number. I don't know yet. I need to sit down and actually
in your top
that.
3? This would be one of the songs you would play for someone who had never heard of Metallica to give them best idea of what this band's
totally.
All about.
Totally. No, I think this song covers the spectrum of what they've done in all their records. It's got like the fast stuff. It doesn't have like super thrashy beats and stuff, but it's got a bit of a thrash sound.
I think the main riff is thrashy.
Yeah, totally. It's got a ballad section to it. It's got a halftime heavy section. It's a good representation of all Metallica.
Is this Hetfield's first solo on record? Because he does that first solo in the melodic.
He does, yeah. I think that might be, actually.
I think this is his first, which I love hearing James Hetfield play lead guitar.
I do too.
It's like got its awesome. Own little flavor.
He totally does, which is why I look forward to his country record.
Shit, you know I look forward to that.
What's crazy is that I think this was as of a couple of years ago. Master of Puppets had been performed like over 1,400 times.
Wow.
Obviously, more now. It's been a couple of years since that data was collected, but I mean, I wonder if have they? I'm sure they have. They've had shows where they haven't played it,
mm-hmm.
but probably very few and far between.
Yeah, and I will say, I mean, just like you, when I walked into Ethan's studio today to do this podcast, he was like deep in a YouTube hole. He was like, dude, I'm in a Cliff Burton rabbit hole.
I was watching his, or listening to the audio of his last show before.
Last show in Stockholm.
Killed. Yeah, totally.
But I've been in so many of those, and Master of Puppets is one of my favorite Metallica songs, so if I see a set list or a show, if they're Master of Puppets in the set list, I always jump to it.
Right.
And as many times as they played it, I've never seen them play it and look bored. I've never seen them.
They're always excited.
I mean, they're always just like playing at 100%.
I mean, if the second I learned that song on guitar until present day, like I get stoked if I ever sit down and just play it.
Dude, so when I was in a senior in high school, I was in a Metallica tribute band that I told you about. We didn't have a name, but we just played Metallica songs.
Yeah.
There was a music class where everyone played guitar. You could bring your acoustic guitar, and they taught us shit like that would have been useful for me to know now as a professional.
Yeah, sure.
About like harmonic structure and all this stuff. And we had this thing where we had to learn something really specific, and then we had to play it. We had to do a performance of it.
Okay.
And me and my friend didn't learn the bullshit, whatever it was. But we pretended when we got up to do our performance of it, we put it like music stands in front of us. We were supposed to be able to read this music, but we played the middle slow part to Master of Puppets because
really?
It sounds classical.
Oh, totally.
And we did it in harmony and shit.
Oh man! Did you
to try to just get away with like,
was your teacher stoked or bummed?
He loved it. I mean, he knew we were full of shit.
Yeah,
but he was just standing in the back of the room laughing.
What if he was a metalhead? He was like, "Fuck yeah, Metallica."
I don't know if he was a metalhead, but he appreciated that. He appreciated that moment.
Dude, that's awesome. I mean, it's arguably one of the best Metallica songs
for sure.
Easily, it's the most played live,
and lyrically pretty smart. Like yeah, I mean, like all the imagery. It's about drug addiction and
totally how the drug takes you over.
Yeah, I think it's pretty smart.
No, it's very smart.
And I love the melody too, the vocal melody.
It's a catchy chorus too. Like this is the thing that Metallica has done on almost every record to me, minus one.
I wonder which one.
We'll get to it later.
Okay. It's a great chorus.
It's a fucking metal song that's like 8 minutes long, and there's great choruses.
I know.
Now, like I said, I love Slayer. But
they don't have choruses like that.
There's not like choruses. No. There's, you know, you could say like support the war, but that's about it. You know, he's yelling, which is cool. I love it.
Payback's a bitch, motherfucker.
But I mean, that's...
No, I agree. So I have referred to this band as the Beatles of metal because
it's why they're the biggest metal band of all time.
I agree.
They wrote songs.
They wrote songs with great choruses.
Yes. Even on thrash songs, they wrote Battery has a good chorus and it's a thrash song.
And I think that the three records they did with Rasmussen, Ride the Lightning, this record, and Justice are some of Kirk's best work.
Yes.
And Master of Puppets, the solo is fucking amazing.
I mean, thank you, Joe Satriani, for the lessons before this record.
Yeah, exactly. So,
and Lars took lessons before this record too, which is funny.
Interesting. I wonder what he learned in those lessons because did he learn how to crash on the two?
Yes. Yeah. No. Well, he was doing that on the early records, but who knows?
He never quite unlearned that.
Oh, we'll get into Lars's drumming on an episode for sure. All right, let's move along here because we're spending a lot of time on Master of Puppets.
Okay.
Rightfully so. But the thing that should not be, I think this is a bit of a highlight track for me because
big time.
It's one, like I said before, I think this is a song that either gives a bit of a preview for what's to come in their later records, and also, I mean, this song could be on the Black Album.
Yeah.
It's the first song they put on record that was in a different tuning, just other than E standard. It's in drop D, and it's fucking heavy as hell.
I think it's got a great lyric too. It's another song based on an H.P. Lovecraft story, but I wrote down the lyric: "Not dead, which eternal lie, stranger eons, death may die." That's fucking killer. I don't know what it means. No clue what he's talking about. But it is kind of a slow, plodding, creepy song.
It totally is. Yeah, I love it. I mean, it stays that way the whole song. You know, there's not like all of a sudden like it picks back up. Like,
I know.
Like you know the famous fourth track.
I will say to that point, it does get kind of long for me on the recording.
Yeah,
I listened to the S&M version this morning and didn't get tired of it. But on the recording, by like the last 2 minutes, I'm a little tired of it. I will say that.
I can see that.
It's kind of samey at the end.
Yeah.
I'm not trying to shoot on your favorite record.
You're not.
But it can't be all praise, right?
You just farted on it. That's all. No shit.
But this is in my top 10 list of my favorite deep cuts. So I have love for this song. Massive love.
Okay, good. Because, yeah, I love this song. It's not my favorite on the record, but it's not my least favorite.
Yeah.
It's somewhere in the middle, I think.
I would be curious. We're going to do that at the end, but I do want to hear what your least favorite is.
Okay.
It's always interesting to hear someone's least favorite song on their favorite record.
I know. Okay.
That's it?
Famous track. Well, I mean, what more can you say about that one? It's an awesome song. It could have been on the Black Album. First song in Drop D.
Yeah, cool.
Fucking great song.
Welcome Home Sanitarium.
Gosh.
Monster song.
Easy rival to my favorite Metallica ballad next to Fade to Black.
Really?
That was a tough call. Yeah, Fade to Black is my favorite Metallica ballad.
Me too.
But Sanitarium was very close. That's a tough one. I love that song. I love playing that song.
Based off the novel One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest.
Yeah.
About being sort of wrongfully imprisoned in an insane asylum. It's a great idea for a song.
Totally. Really good. Really, really good idea.
Do you think out of between one, Fade to Black, and Sanitarium, in my opinion, the intro solo, they all have that intro solo?
Totally.
It's my least favorite of the three.
This one is?
Yeah.
Really?
I like Fade to Black and the one intro solo is better than this one.
I would say
if you had to pick one.
One is amazing, but that might be my least favorite.
Really?
Yeah. Maybe it's a little tarnished because live, it just sounds like Kirk has some weird chorusy thing.
Like shit.
It sounds like out of tune. It sounds like shit. What's your problem, Kirk? I know you're listening. Jesus. I do love the Sanitarium intro solo. But, and they're Creatures of Habit back then. They had a format to this record,
right.
Just like Ride the Lightning and Justice. Track four is like ballad until the end, and then it kind of just takes off, and you got some great guitar work at the end, good soloing.
Yeah, I love the bridge.
Oh, it's so good. The chord progression's great. This one just gets me excited every time I hear it. I was listening to it today in the car running some errands. The chorus guitar riff to me is so fun.
Yeah.
It's just so, I don't know.
I love it when we sing these
riffs.
I know,
we're going to sing a lot of them. I know it's not metal to say, that riff is fun, but I really do. It's fun to, by that I mean it's fun to play, it's fun to listen to. Fuck you. Lay off. But yeah, Sanitarium, I mean, I think it's the second most played song off this record live.
Yes, correct.
Yeah, I mean, it's, I don't know, what else do you want to say about it? It's a fucking great song.
I don't know. I don't know if I have anything specific to say about it. I've always loved it. I've never not liked it.
Right.
I've always loved the shit out of this song.
Totally.
Yeah. They didn't play it live the two times I saw them, and I'm bummed about that.
They didn't play it on the Summer Sanitarium Tour.
No. Yeah, it was called the Summer Sanitarium Tour. And they did not play
it's like, 2017, the Battery Tour, and we're not going to play Battery. Oh, geez. Okay, side B.
All right, I want to get into side B. I've had a lot of fun with side B because, for whatever reason, in my fandom and growing up, side B never stuck with me as much, but I've been digging the shit out of side B the last few days.
Yeah, so good. I mean, Disposable Heroes.
Okay, so for me, it's between Disposable Heroes and Battery, with which song is most brutal on this record.
I mean, this
one. I think
it
might be this one.
This one is the fastest song.
It's fast as fuck.
It's so fast.
It super is, dude.
The look on your face, you're like, it's fast.
I was being sincere.
You
yeah.
were very sincere. No, I even read online that it was like 240 beats per minute, like to date or to, you know.
And Cliff was doing that with his fingers.
I know. It's crazy.
How did he do that?
Yeah, he was blessed. Jeez. This was the song, like we talked about earlier, that you were saying maybe there weren't as many catchy parts on the second half of the record.
Well, I like the back to the front. No, I would say
you will do what I say.
I will
what
say,
I say that's catchy.
I agree. I totally agree. Yeah. I think out of between this Leper Messiah and Damage Inc., this one is the most catchy.
What about the Orion chorus? Trick
that's
question.
My favorite lyric. I do agree. The Disposable Heroes is hookier than the other two.
Yeah. What I think is I like, but is almost kind of humorous is. This song doesn't seem to end.
They even do kind of a fake ending, right?
They totally do.
Which I love.
Bah, 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 bah. Like, oh, the song's done. Brrr, right
super
back into
thrashy.
It.
Yeah, totally. So good.
Which had to have gone over great live.
Yeah.
Like, everyone's like, oh, yeah. And they know the song, but it's like, are they just going to end it here? And then
which is funny, because normally moments like that, you just do them live, but they actually put it on the record.
It sounds like they thought to themselves, what would we do live with the song?
Yeah.
Oh, we would do this.
Yeah.
Well, let's record it.
I mean, when you're playing as many shows as they are, there's no way when you're writing your new record, you're not thinking about what's going to happen live.
You have to. Especially after you wrote For Whom the Bell Tolls.
Oh, dude.
You know? But, I mean, yeah, Disposable Heroes, fuck. That could be, and we'll talk about your hypothetical track listing.
I'll just tell you this about it. So we're going to do this at the end, but I have a resequencing, imagining this record as a concept record.
Yeah.
And this song is track one.
Okay, I was going to say this could be a track one on this record.
Yeah. So I did two things. I resequenced it without any kind of concept, and it's not track one.
Okay.
But in my concept record imagining, this is track one.
God, a concept record. That's so
okay. Good. I'm sorry about all that. Okay. It's too nerdy.
Moving on. Leper Messiah.
I like it, man.
I like it too. It's a song about like the hypocrisy of like televangelists. Yeah,
right.
Totally.
I love the, I even wrote this down. I love the, send me money, send me green, make a contribution, you'll get a better seat. That's killer.
Yeah, totally. It's almost, it almost sounds like Scientology.
Oh, really?
Well,
Christian Science
send me money,
was...
Yeah, or send me money and you'll get a better seat. Was it Hetfield's parents that were they Christian Scientists?
Yeah.
But same kind of thing. That's common in some of those weird religions like that, you know, like...
Yeah, and
donate kind of, more and you're more holy and you have a better seat.
And a pre-chorus to God That Failed and sort of James's angry dealing with like organized religion.
Right.
Not just religion, just organized religion.
Yeah.
And I love the end just ends with like, lie, lie. It's like super
yeah, totally.
Angry, dude.
Oh, that's great. And, super good.
And this would probably be my vote for least favorite on the record, maybe.
You were asking me that earlier and of my, it's my favorite album, but this is my least favorite song.
But Ride the Lightning is my favorite album and... the sort of similar sister song to the song maybe be Trapped Under Ice, and I like this song better than Trapped Under Ice.
I think Escape would be that song.
Oh really? Is Damage Inc. more like Trapped Under Ice for you?
Oh yeah, totally.
Okay, cool.
Yeah,
so we kind of agree that this definitely the this is a B side B world. There's a reason the first four tunes are ones that sort of stuck. I mean, they don't ever play these other songs live anymore. Do they?
They'll do Orion.
I'm wrong.
They'll do Orion from time to time. Yeah, it's cool. It's cool to see Robert do it.
Should we get into Orion? Because I would love to talk about Orion.
Yes, let's please get into Orion.
I texted Ian this morning and said, dude, I listened to Orion 8 times today.
Yeah, which is awesome. Orion is so good. Like, I love instrumental music. I love old surf music.
I do too.
I love that kind of stuff. But for a metal band to have a song like this that's not real, like, techie, it's not, like, shreddy. It's a beautiful piece.
It sounds like, to me, there's a record that John Carpenter, do you know who John Carpenter is?
Oh, yeah.
Director, yes. Horror director. Oh, yeah. He did The Thing and The Fog and Halloween. Mm-hmm. He has a, he made a record called Lost Themes. He makes music with his son. And
oh,
it's
cool.
Real kind of 80s synthy shit.
Yeah.
But Orion sounds like that. The way the effects on the bass kind of sounds synthy.
Well, I mean, the intro is bass.
But when it fades in with that drum beat.
Yeah, totally.
But it kind of sounds like, 80, it sounds like the new TV show Stranger Things.
It's very
like
similar to that.
Like
yeah.
It could have been a soundtrack for that.
Yeah, totally.
And I think when it gets into that slow, like Pink Floyd psychedelic shit.
Oh, the whole bridge,
the middle
cliff
thing.
Road.
Oh, dude,
oh it's,
dude,
it changes keys. First of all, I mean the song's in E minor, then it goes to F sharp minor.
All right, that I wouldn't know that.
You wouldn't know that?
I've never learned how to play it,
dude. I've got a bass right here.
Oh, here we go. Oh, here we go. Like, Ethan's now grabbing one of his bass guitars.
Well, it's a hollow body bass, so I could...
Let's hear
so,
it.
So, like, the main... I'm going to play the guitar riff on...
I'm so glad we're doing this on the podcast.
I'm playing the guitar riff on bass, but, you know, it's like...
Hell yeah. Here we go.
It's on bass, but... So
then
that's
what
a,
happens?
That's an E minor, but then the bridge...
I hope your mic is picking all this up.
It probably is. So that's in F sharp.
Hell yeah, dude.
It is the cool.
Yeah.
It's such a good song. Cliff shines on this song, in my opinion.
You said last week that Orion's your favorite instrumental, and I said that mine was To Live is to Die. And after listening to Orion 8 times this morning, I think I've changed my mind.
It's beautiful.
Although I will say this. So at the very end... they kind of finish the beautiful thing, and then it kind of goes into about a minute of, to me, a little bit boring rock riff stuff. It's not even thrashy, and then a kind of a fade out. Like, I wish they would have just let it end.
On the bridge?
Yeah, it kind of, to me, it feels like there's like a real natural moment where it's kind of ending, but then they're like, it's almost like they were afraid to let it just end that way, so they kind of
or
rock.
Lars was like, it needs to be longer.
Probably.
Yeah. I mean,
do
I
do. You like the
I
way
do.
It ends?
What's that?
Do you like the way it ends?
I do. I don't love it. Like, I don't think it's maybe...
It's the only
perfect,
part of the song that's not, like, special to me. Out of a very long song, the last minute or so, I get kind of like, oh.
I can see that, but I mean, I still... I don't know. I mean, it's my favorite record. I've listened to that song God knows how many times since I was, you know, 11, 12 years old. You know, I still love that outro. You know, I see your point in that it would have been... an amazing ending if it was ended on the bridge that Cliff wrote.
Yeah.
Plus that's, you know, that's his time to shine.
Yeah.
you know?
Yeah.
There's a, I mean, dude, like the second solo after the Pink Floyd-y thing with the harmony guitars is bass.
Sing
the... Did you know that? It's the part at the end here. Like, as we're talking about it, I'll just pull it up on my phone because technology is awesome for things like this. I'm not about to sing a Cliff Burton bass solo, by the way.
It'd be better for the podcast if you sang it.
All right, I'm going to get this here. Wait, where are you?
All those harmonies, man. So beautiful.
I know. Why am I... That's bass.
Oh, I didn't know that.
And then the guitar harmonizes with it.
I had no idea.
That whole part.
Wow.
I'll play from the top. For all you listeners, you're like, we've heard this a million times, but for real, this is... It's incredible. It's fucking bass.
I'm curious if a lot of listeners knew that that was bass.
Maybe. Here we go. Wait, sorry. That's Kurt. My bad. It's after this. I'll turn it down while we...
It's 16 minutes after this.
In 16 minutes. All right, here it comes. Fade back in.
Here we go. I had no idea that was a bass.
Yeah.
Wow.
Well, once you hear it and someone says that's bass, then you kind of listen to it and go, right. Yeah, that is bass.
God damn.
Fucking Cliff Burton, dude. I'm telling you. I love Trujillo.
I do too.
He's an outstanding
bass
player.
He's grown on me a lot.
Yeah. I don't know if he would come up with a part like that.
No, I think that's...
Even listening to the new record, there's nothing on there bass-wise that I'm like, oh, shit. There is some cool stuff towards the end. We hit some, like, almost... I mean, probably trying to sound like Cliff. Like, it's like distorted bass, and it sounds really cool,
I know, it's so much to get into, but it's almost like when he came into the band in 2003 or 4 or whatever, they're not looking for him to bring some innovative shit the way Cliff did. Like, that time is gone.
Totally.
You know what I mean? Like, it's just so hard to... parse that all that out.
What are you going to bring to the table that Hetfield hasn't already written?
And we're going to talk about some of the Cliff issue, but like the Cliff issue, the Cliff episode. We don't have serial comic issues
Cliff
yet.
Cliff issue.
But he's like been irreplaceable all this time.
Totally. Like I said before, I mean, what other member of a band has left the kind of legacy that Cliff has?
Yeah.
That if it was possible for him to be reincarnated to his former self, or just come back to life, whatever. All those guys would be like, "Hey, Robert, we love you.
You're out.
Cliff is back.
You're out."
You know, it's
immediately.
I mean, Cliff Burton's dad, Ray Burton, shows up to shows, and they bring him out on stage, and people go fucking crazy. And that's his dad. It's amazing.
By the way, for those of you listening, we have reached out to Cliff Burton's dad.
Yes.
To see if he would like to come on the podcast.
Fingers crossed.
Fingers crossed.
That would be awesome.
That would be really
Ray,
cool.
If you're listening.
Ray, we know you're out there.
We would love to talk about your family and the legacy your son left.
We're going to do it regardless, but it'd be nice to talk about it with you.
Oh, it'd be great. Yeah, totally. All right, last track.
Damage Inc.
Gosh. Speaking of bass, that whole intro reverse thing is all bass.
Yeah, the sort of swelly.
It's like bass chords.
Right.
Fucking Cliff Burton.
Cliff Burton, man. It's I'm going to miss him, dude, when we move on from this record.
I know, seriously.
We're going to miss this shit.
Well, we'll do like, we can start doing like, you know, remembrance episodes, like in memoriam, you know?
Right.
Once a year on his birthday or death day. But,
Oh, speaking of that, I made a note. Oh, some section, I don't know which one, it wasn't specified, but some section of Orion.
Yeah.
James actually had tattooed on his body, like the music notes.
Oh, wow.
Hetfield had notes from the middle tattooed on his arm.
Maybe the bass line that I just ripped on this podcast. I play it on a Guild hollow body bass.
Cliff, if you're listening, Guild,
be down with that bass.
He probably would.
Yeah, it's black.
He didn't always play black basses.
That's true. I mean, his Rickenbackers.
Those Rickenbackers, yeah, right?
Those are so cool.
So Damage Inc., I wrote about the bass wells. Kirk has said that those bass wells were inspired by a Bach piece.
Yeah, that's cool.
Pretty neat.
That's awesome, yeah.
They said that during the making of this record, he would walk around unironically shouting, "Bach is God."
Kirkwood or Cliff?
Cliff.
Bach is God.
Bach is God.
Later would turn to Lemmy for the rest of the guys.
The most important thrash record ever made in the Library of Congress was made by the bass player talking about Bach.
That's amazing.
It's pretty cool.
It's amazing. Maybe that's why it's in the Library of Congress.
Let me ask you this. Do you like the whispered Damage Inc?
Damage Incorporated.
Yeah, do you like that?
I do. It's do? Creepy. I think it's creepy. Would it be awesome if James Hetfield did his fucking James scream?
Damage Incorporated.
It would be great. Sure. But
it is like the only moment in Metallica records I know where they kind of do that. Like,
yeah,
kind of whisper cool. the hook.
I mean, I don't know. To me, it's just creepy sounding, you know, and each time it happens, it goes right back into something fast. You know, I think this, the intro to the song, post bass reverse chords.
Yeah.
Is so good. It's the dat, 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 it's like marching. It's
I love it, dude.
It's so good.
Blood will follow blood. Dying time is here.
Yes.
It's so good.
Yeah. I think this is also another kind of not super formulaic because they ended with the instrumental on Ride Lightning, but they end this record with Damage Incorporated and it's so fucking fast and thrashy and awesome. And then same thing on Justice with Dire's Eve.
Yes.
Just a super fast ass song.
This is going to come up later when we talk about my resequencing.
Okay, I think we should get into it here soon because we're at the last track.
Here's the last thing I'll say about this song is the fuck it all fucking no regrets, which I love that line so much.
It's so good.
But but it got ruined because they sing it in Saint Anger. Fuck it all and fucking no regrets, I hit the lights on these toxins. So not only do they invoke fuck it all and fucking no regrets, hit the lights on these
That's
toxins.
Right. Yes, you're correct.
So they're saying intentionally, fuck it all, fucking no regrets. They're intentionally referencing Damage Inc. Hit the lights on these toxins. Definitely intentionally referencing Hit the Lights.
Yeah.
So it's kind of forever.
I will say, though, I do. If there's one thing to love on that Saint Anger record, it's that chorus. That's the one song that if I can ignore the snare drum, and the verses aren't so great.
Yeah.
But the chorus is so good on that song, I think.
On Saint Anger?
Yes.
Saint Anger round my neck.
Yeah, but when it goes into the fuck it all, that whole thing, I think, is great. It sounds like classic Metallica minus production, of course. And you flush it out. You flush it out.
Oh, God. Kirk's terrible background vocals.
And Robert did some on there.
On the record?
There's video of him doing it,
On the record? Yeah. Oh, Jesus. Oh, God.
Anyways, back to better songs, Damage Incorporated. Gosh, I mean,
it's a killer song,
man. It's a great song. I wish they would play it more live.
Yeah,
I do too. Might be kind of tough in your 50s. I don't know.
I will say, for those of you, I'm sure that a lot of the people listening to this have seen it, but they did a show in Mexico City in, I think, 2009, where they played this record in its entirety. And it's so fun to see them play these like back half songs. Disposable Heroes, Leper Messiah. And that fast shit in Disposable Heroes, they're playing it. Dude, it's tight.
That's awesome.
They're killing it.
That's so rad. Yeah, I mean, yeah, I wish they'd play it more, you know, as frequent as maybe Puppets or something. But, I mean, I get it, you know. You get older and maybe it's a little tougher to play those songs. But did they just play Blacken the other night in Oakland?
I would argue Blacken's a better song.
Oh, than Disposable Heroes?
Yeah. I think Blacken's a better song than...
Yeah, I would say I like Blacken better than this, but it's...
I mean, I hate pitting my babies against each other, but I get why they play...
Who's your favorite kid?
I get why they would play Blacken instead of Damage.
Yeah, totally. But, I mean, all that to say, to close out the track-by-track segment of this episode, I mean, Damage Inc. is an amazing thrash song. Great way to close out this record. Close out probably the most classic Metallica record, in my opinion. My favorite record.
I think so, too.
Your favorite record. Not you, Clint, but you, the listener.
Even though it's not my favorite, I agree. There's something more resonant about it, and it's more powerful than Ride the Lightning, which is its kind of sister record.
Totally.
I agree. There's something actually really special about this record.
Yeah. Oh, very much so. So, onward.
So, I have
to resequence.
So, I have two things I want to do.
Okay.
Really brief.
The floor is yours. I'm going to sit over here and drink some whiskey and vape.
And I won't make it super long because I know we're up at an hour and 3 minutes here. Here's a suggestion of a resequence. Okay. Open with Battery. Great opener. Done. Master Puppets. Great follow-up. I think the thing that should not be should come later in the record because it's sort of a slow, plodding, esoteric song. I think you follow up Master of Puppets with Damage Inc. because one of the things that bothers me about Damage Inc. is that the ending of Damage Inc. isn't a big event. It's kind of like, it just ends. It's a shorter song. It's like 5 minutes long.
Yeah.
Throw in the shorter song, Damage Inc., track three. Track four, Keep, Welcome Home Sanitarium. Track five, Leper Messiah. Great thrashy metal song, Harmless.
Also, but interesting choice for the first song of Side B.
It is the first song of Side B, but it's sort of thrashy. Like, it's like up. It's a very up song.
It's right? up, yeah, yeah.
Then you have Things Shouldn't Be. You're getting some moody shit, right? Then Orion's perfectly fine where it is.
Those two, Things Shouldn't Be and Orion, that would go well together.
Be cool, right? Because it's kind of, it's a more mid-tempo into esoteric, psychedelic cliff shit. Then the record, to your point about mirroring Dyer's Eve, should end with Disposable Heroes, because it's fucking long, epic, and it has a fake ending.
The ending would be a great closeout to that record.
Yeah.
I wonder if at any point that was a discussion. Like, surely it had to be. Like,
I haven't read a lot about how they sequence their records. Like, how if they, like, because what some people do when they sequence records is they make different sequences and they listen to it over and over. And,
right, totally.
It's easy to do now with iTunes. But
yeah.
Back then, I don't know what they would have to make a tape or.
Probably go in the car, listen to it.
So that's my, so what do you think about that resequence?
I think it's pretty good.
It's okay.
Starting Side B with Leper Messiah is a little weird for me.
Cause starting with Disposable Heroes is pretty killer.
Oh yeah.
You flip the record and you got Disposable Heroes.
It's so good. Yeah.
Yeah.
Now if they would have edited out Lars going, one, two, you know, that whole thing. Because
that's on Leper Messiah,
That kind of bums me out a little bit. Like, do you
I don't dig it either.
Does that need to be there?
I don't dig it either.
If you edited that out, going right into dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun might be really cool.
Yeah.
Maybe I'll do that. I will resequence it myself and edit that out and then listen to it in the car and see how it goes.
So here's a fun thing I thought of today.
Yeah, and this is super nerdy. This is what I'm curious about. This is your concept record idea.
So... And this is super not self-serious. So if this sounds lame, then it is lame. Don't worry about it. So I thought about it as a concept record about one character, all right? Record opens with Disposable Heroes. 21-year-old war. Kid goes to war, right? Gets disillusioned, fucked up in war. What do they say? Like, soldier made of clay and all that stuff.
Yeah.
Back to the front, you know, do what I say. He comes back from the war. And he starts getting involved in, he's like, he has PTSD maybe. He's getting involved in crimes, committing battery.
Ah, okay, okay.
Cannot stop the battery.
So that's track two?
That's track two.
Okay.
Track three, he gets recruited by a local neighborhood gang, organized crime called Damage Inc.
Ooh, okay.
Where you will be my victim and, you know, blood will follow blood, dying time is here. So he's basically a criminal now.
Wow, okay.
But he's sort of involved in sort of an organized crime issue.
Okay.
Parents intervene. Try to get him hooked on religion, but it fails him because of the Leper Messiah. Televangelist.
Love this.
Totally disillusions him because he just really wants money, right?
Yeah.
So what does he do? He turns to drugs. The old master of puppets.
The master of puppets, yeah. Right? So that would be first track on side B.
First track on side B, following the story, chopping his breakfast on a mirror, as they say in the song. On a drug trip, we have Orion. Happen, which is like a psychedelic drug trip, right? Drug trip.
That bridge totally could be a psychedelic drug trip.
Exactly.
Oh, yeah.
Drug trip goes bad. One too many drugs, goes insane. He starts seeing this monster that doesn't exist. The thing that should,
the
not,
thing
be.
That should not be.
Forbidden sight.
Yeah.
Right? And then how does it all end? Being put in an insane asylum. Welcome home, sanitarium.
Sanitarium is the last track. I mean, it makes sense with your story.
Yeah. Pretty good, right?
It's really good. Are you kidding me? Earlier you texted me, you're like, hey, I haven't really made notes yet. Sorry, I've been kind of busy today, but I'm going to get... And then you show up with like a resequenced Master of Puppets as a concept album with one character. That's really good. I'm proud of you, Clint.
I was driving to pick up my daughter from daycare today, doing it all in my head. I was like, holy shit, wait, which comes first? Wait, does he join Damage Inc. before he does drugs or...
What if that was the original idea that Hetfield had, and then like it got shot down because of the trade? He was like, "Fuck! It's supposed to be a concept record.
This supposed to be his Tommy."
That could be that really is a good idea. I'm glad you thought
of
that.
It makes sense, right?
Totally makes sense. Yeah,
I'm gonna sequence it that way.
You should. What about you, listeners out there? What do you think? Could this be a concept record? One character. What's a character's name?
Ooh.
You ever think about that?
Are there any names mentioned in this record?
Gosh, put me on the spot like that.
I guess I would have to say his name's probably James Hetfield.
probably. Hames Jetfield.
I don't know, too. Like, you also, like, it really is probably their best record, and you don't want to kind of fuck with the timeless piece of art. So that's all just fun.
Yeah, you know, it's a fun way to look at the record, maybe listen to it a couple times like that with the concept record idea in mind. I think that's cool. But yeah, I mean, it is what it is. I mean, this is the I'm looking at the track listing right now, and this is the record that we know and love, and it was the first Metallica album I purchased right, with my own money. And yeah, it's fun to resequence things, but I mean, I can't imagine a better order, because it's ingrained in my mind right now.
And it's cool that it holds up after all these years.
Yes, it totally does. It totally does. I actually found somebody did a remaster and put it on YouTube or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
I think people have way too much time on their hands. Now, with Death Magnetic, please remaster it. But right. Somebody remastered it, and it like brought out a lot of Cliff's bass playing.
Oh, cool.
Cool, but
didn't sound like the classic record,
it's
you know.
It's weird, yeah. It's almost a little distracting. Like, the tone is cool, and obviously he's playing cool parts. Maybe it's because I've heard, obviously, the version we know for so long, but I just thought, like, there's a reason that, like, professionals do this. You know what I mean? Right. Like, there's a reason that, like,
some guy in his basement.
Yeah, I mean, maybe this guy is a mastering engineer and makes a living at it. I don't know, but...
If he's posting it on YouTube, if he's remastering old Metallica records on YouTube, I don't know.
Yeah, maybe. Unless he's just a nerd like us. Because I've definitely re-recorded Bass in Justice for All. I'm not kidding.
Are you serious?
Yes.
I don't think I knew that.
Yeah, I have.
We got to let everyone hear that.
I didn't do the whole record. I think I did. I think I started with Shortest Straw, maybe.
Oh, cool.
I just wanted to hear what it sounded like with the bass turned up. So I just recorded it one day.
What do they call the... A lot of people have done that. What do they call it?
Injustice for Jason.
That's so good.
We'll get into that, too.
I can't wait to talk about Jason, and I can't wait to talk about that fucking record.
Yeah, totally. No, it's an amazing record. Got that on vinyl too. But, well, closing out, we hope you enjoy the Master of Puppets episode.
Yeah, thanks everyone for
listening. I really had a good time talking about this. Man. I mean, there's so much information about this record that there was times that I was like, brain fart. But I love this record. I will listen to it the rest of my life. It would always be on whatever device is in my hand, whatever, you know, on the turntable. Yeah. I'm going to put it on my record player tomorrow morning when I make breakfast.
I'm sure your wife will love it.
Well, she'll be at work.
Waking up to the soothing sounds of battery. Like, oh, what's this? This is nice. Oh, shit.
Oh, you fooled me. All right.
Well, where can everyone find us if they want to find us?
Well, I'm glad you asked. Interesting you say that.
I'm scratching my beard.
You can go to Metallica.com. You can find us. MetalUpYourPodcast.com. You can subscribe there, listen to the episodes. On Twitter, it's MetalUpYourCast. On Instagram, MetalUpYourPodcast. And then you can go to Facebook and just search for MetalUpYourPodcast, and you'll find us. Yeah. Shoot us an email, MetalUpYourPodcastShow@gmail.com. You can email us questions, concerns, anger.
I would like to know if any of you have ever thought about resequencing puppets, what your sequence would be.
Yeah, totally. I would love to hear other people's.
And we will read those on subsequent podcasts if you send them to us.
Yeah, totally. Yeah, we can do like little follow-up episodes or something, and you get some fan interaction stuff going. So, yeah, let us know your resequence. Email us, metalupyourpodcastshow@gmail.com. And until then, I guess we'll see you episode 5. It's going to be Cliff Burton.
Yeah, looking forward to it.
Oh, it's going to be a fun one. I really need to dig deep on Cliff and get some good facts.
Some nice facts
about that young man.
What we need here is some good facts.
Well, you know, I mean, there's stuff that everyone knows about Cliff Burton, but I would love to, like, find stuff that, you know, the hardcore fans have only found out.
Yeah, I wonder what kind of bell bottoms he wore.
I'm guessing Levi's.
Shit, mystery solved.
Bugle Boys, probably.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. All right, everybody, mail up your podcast. We will see you next time.
See ya. Peace.
If you were our advisor, what would you say? Then I would say, delete that.